When we were driving in Charlotte, North Carolina during the Democratic convention, we saw one. The ghostly apparition that seemed to float next to the telephone pole it was locked to at the corner of South Tryon Avenue and Remont Road, a bike painted white, covered with flowers and a teddy bear, a memorial to Chris Chris Potts, who was 13 years old when she was riding and hit by a school bus in May of 2008. There are now two new ghost bikes here in Boston, marking where cyclists were killed this month. There are ghost bikes everywhere. We wanted to find out about who puts them there, but more important, why is this happening? The League of American Bicyclists estimates that at least 700 cyclists are killed in U.S. traffic accidents every year. And the New York Times had a big piece today about the increase in deaths of cyclists and pedestrians after a five-year decline in New York. New York just announced plans to stencil the word "look" on curbsides at dangerous intersections, and to put it on decals inside taxis to try to prevent cyclists from being doored or prevent pedestrians from being hit by a cyclist they're not watching out for. But is it possible that the idea to get more people on bikes in a world filled with cars just isn't working? We want to start our conversation with Ryan Knuckle. He helped found New York City's Ghost Bike Project. Ryan, we understand this can be traced loosely to St. Louis.
Yeah, the first ghost bikes went up in 2003 in St. Louis after a rash of crashes there. And then they spread to Pittsburgh and then to New York City. And New York City, I think, is the place where it really took off as a national movement.
How many did you put up a year?
About 20 per year in New York City.
Wow.
And since 2005, there are ghost bikes in about 500 cities across the world.
Well, the bikes are ethereal, and the process of getting them there sometimes is as well. David Watson, who directs the Massachusetts Bicycle Coalition, says there's nothing organized about it here in the Boston area, so these bikes just sort of appeared. But in New York, where you are, members of the Street Memorial Project get together to build and put the ghost bikes out there. And we understand some of those people have lost people to cycling accidents.
Typically, you know, this is less of a movement than just a tactic that people pick up. It's a basic human need to respond to a tragedy and to try to have a public memorial for it and hopefully point the way towards solutions.
Well, on the website, and we'll link to people to all of these websites at herenow.org, you do say it. It's also about changing policy. And I said something. I said cycling accidents. A lot of cyclists don't want to hear that word. They don't think that these are accidents as much as, you know, homicides in some cases. So talk a little bit about what would you like to see changed in New York?
Well, the good news is that New York has made some pretty big strides in the last 5 years, rolling out bike lanes and doing some of the education work that you mentioned. What's been missing is the enforcement piece, and engineering and enforcement go together hand in hand. The NYPD has done very little to respond to traffic crashes at all, and in a number of cases, they've blundered some investigations.
Give an example. I mean, what are you saying? Are you saying a cyclist gets hit and an investigation isn't done as into whether a motorist, you know, maybe didn't use a signal or, you know,
sure.
Yeah.
We've had cases in New York City where the NYPD didn't calibrate breathalyzers, and therefore drunk drivers were let off the hook on technicalities. We've had cases where drivers who are speeding and running red lights have gotten no charges whatsoever, not even a ticket. And the leading cause of crashes in New York City, at least, is usually speeding or dangerous behavior, failure to yield, things like that. And we've seen in many precincts in New York City, the police are issuing less speeding tickets than they are tickets for tinted windows or other things that really aren't a priority.
You know, there are motorists who say, what about the cyclists? They're not abiding by the thinking that if you're on a bike, you are a car, that the cyclists aren't stopping at the red lights, aren't signaling when they're going to turn, are riding inside of vehicles that are, you know, hanging a right-hand turn so that the cyclist on the right side of the vehicle or the truck can't get out of the way because they're, you know, they haven't paid attention to the turn at the corner, things like that. I mean, do you think the cyclists also need more education?
I mean, I think that as bicycling becomes more commonplace in big cities, you see bike behavior change and evolve. What used to be a kind of daredevil activity is now something that a lot of people are just doing as part of their daily life. And really what's needed is infrastructure. You can talk about who was in the wrong in a particular case and who cut who off, but if everyone has their separated space to be in and everybody knows where to see each other and where to expect each other, we've seen that happen in New York City. Streets with protected bike lanes have cut crashes by as much as 50%.
And let's tell people what those look like. They are sometimes extremely protected by jersey barriers so that you can have a bike lane that's separated from the traffic by a huge cement barrier.
Yeah, in New York City we have some that are separated from traffic by parking, some that are just separated by marked paint, some that are separated by jersey barriers or bollards. And really having your own space and knowing where each other are going to be, it's much, much safer.
So, Ryan, I'm looking at comments at the website. Here's someone who writes, whenever I see those white bikes, it reminds me someone died there. It reminds me to be careful for the bikers. Here's a person who says, my husband's 83-year-old aunt comes into Manhattan from Queens on public transportation just to visit the bike that you guys put up for him. Her husband was killed. And then here's one from you. You have a friend who was killed. Who was that?
It was a college friend of mine, Eric Ng. He was killed by a drunk driver in 2005.
And
2006.
Yeah. How did you'd been doing bikes for strangers before that? How ironic, first of all, that then there's a friend of yours. But then how does it help the bike?
It does. I mean, I had been working on the project for a year and a half when my friend Eric was killed, and it really brought it home to me in a lot of ways. And I still visit his bike and take care of it and repaint it when I can. It's still there.
Yeah.
And I think the bike, a ghost bike, functions as a kind of gathering place for people in a lot of ways. Even people who didn't know the person who was killed, they acknowledge that something happened here, and hopefully it makes them think and makes them look at their neighborhood and their surroundings a little bit differently.
Yeah, as opposed to a headline that will be gone the next day.
Yeah, and that's really why the project started, because there was a rash of crashes in 3 people killed in the space of a month. And, it's in the paper, and then everybody forgets. So we wanted to do something to leave a lasting impression on the city and really acknowledge the scale of the problem so that we could, talk about trying to solve it, which we are.
That's Ryan Knuckle, who helped found New York City's Ghost Bike Project, and as we just heard, put one up for a friend. How about you? Do you know of a ghost bike? Some of you may have heard. A friend of mine, a giant of a guy named Mike Cervantes, was killed by a distracted driver, wondering if we should put up a bike for him. But have you? Let us know. Post a picture, hereandnow.org or facebook.com/hereandnowradio. We're going to be back with Ryan. We're also going to hear from the advocacy group, the League of American Bicyclists. They say their research shows cyclists are often not at fault, but maybe you have a different opinion. Are you a driver who feels that cyclists have to take more responsibility or maybe shouldn't even be on city roads? Let us hear from you as well, hereandnow.org. Back in 1 minute, Here and Now. Welcome back to our conversation about ghost bikes and bike safety. Before the break, we were talking to Ryan Knuckle. He helped found New York City's Ghost Bike Project in 2005, and then in 2006, put up a ghost bike for a friend who was killed by a drunk driver. We're going to hear from Ryan again, but first, Carolyn Schapansky of the League of American Bicyclists, a bike safety and education lobbying group. And Carolyn, your group has a new initiative called Every Bicyclist Counts. They want to log what's happening across the country. And part of that is analyzing what happens when someone's killed. You looked at 125 fatalities between February and May of this year. What did you find?
We didn't expect that we would find that more than a third of the crashes, the cyclist was hit from behind. I think that there's a conception that this is a problem of cyclists being in the way of a right-turning car or being sideswiped. And so we're trying to understand better why this is happening and hopefully reduce the numbers moving forward.
Hit from behind, what does that tell you? Somebody just doesn't see them?
Well, it kind of speaks to the myth that the cyclist tends to be at fault, that the cyclist is the one operating unsafely. We also found that in 46% of the crashes, the driver was operating in a careless or inattentive manner. So it's really pointing out that this is certainly a shared responsibility. Yes, cyclists need to be obeying the laws of the road, but also motorists have to be aware and careful and share the responsibility of sharing the road.
Carolyn, look further out for us. Some of these numbers that we're seeing of cyclist deaths, and we're feeling it here in the Boston area with several just in the last month. Why do you think it's going up?
as you see the number of bicyclists out on the street increase, that could be a cause of the increased number of fatalities. But also, we're very heartened by the fact that the more cyclists that are out on the street, there's safety in numbers. The more bicyclists that motorists see, the more cognizant they are of us out on the road. So we're hopeful that with, like Ryan was talking about, with increased infrastructure, with increased education, that these numbers will start to go down.
And talk about the infrastructure piece. In older cities, you can't put buffers. I mean, you know, I've seen the parking, for instance, where you have two lanes of motorist driving, then you have a strip of parked cars, and then you have the bike lane, kind of pulling the parked cars out into the street. You can't do that in small city streets.
You'd actually be very surprised at the innovative things that are happening in communities across the country. We have a program called the Bicycle Friendly America Program. We designate bicycle-friendly communities. We provide technical assistance to communities in educating them on how they can make biking safer and more accessible in their community.
What are some of the ways, especially more congested cities?
Well, infrastructure, certainly protected bike lanes are becoming more commonplace. Traditional bike lanes are an important piece. There's a pavement marking called a sharrow, which indicates the presence of bicyclists, indicates the right of bicyclists to be on that road and to take the full lane when their safety requires it. And there are also like Share the Road campaigns. There are promotional events like Bike to Work Day.
But how do you get to that piece of education? It feels as if the streets have been flooded with cyclists, good for the environment, healthier, until, of course, you're doored by somebody opening their door and not looking, or until a cyclist hits a pedestrian because the pedestrian has stepped into a crosswalk and the cyclist has not stopped, as cars would have to when somebody steps into a crosswalk. How do you get to that piece of education? Because it feels as if that's not happening.
We have a national bicycle skills and safety curriculum that's used throughout the country. In recent years, the number of people taking those courses has risen precipitously. Across the nation, we have close to 3,700 people who are certified as league cycling instructors to teach those types of skills, teach where you should be on the road so that you're not at the risk of being doored, how to maneuver on the streets so that you're being predictable, being visible, being ready to encounter pedestrians, ready to operate in the flow of traffic in a safe way.
But these are people who are interested in taking these courses. Ryan Knuckle, I'm going to bring you back in again with the Ghost Bike Project in New York. Would you like to see something more? I'm thinking PSAs, something that has to be right in front of the eyeballs of everybody.
Oh, sure. And the city is doing some of that. They're putting signs and videos in taxi cabs. They're even changing taxi cab designs to have sliding doors instead of swinging doors to help prevent dooring.
But what about reminding cyclists that they have to look out for turning vehicles, that when you are on a bike, you are a car?
I think there's education that can be done on all sides. The safety in numbers effect of having more bikes on the street is real. It's ultimately about getting drivers to know to expect bikes and how to behave.
But just one last question for you both. We have this New York Times report today of this disturbing rise in fatalities in New York City, and they seem to say that it's because of distracted people, people on earbuds, people looking at texts, both pedestrians stepping into crosswalks, and cyclists. We've all seen it, especially here in a college area, you know, cyclists who are, you know, have earbuds on or are actually looking at texts while they're riding. What do you do about that distracted cycling or even walking?
I mean, that's certainly a very serious issue among motorists as well, and I would probably venture to say that there's more folks in cars on their cell phones and checking their text messages than folks on bikes, so it's definitely a shared responsibility.
And just finally, Ryan, I was reading some of the comments at your website, and we'll link people up. Most incredibly sympathetic to what you do, memorializing the cyclists who've been killed. But then there's also one from someone who says, what's next? Ghost sneakers for dead joggers? Ghost skateboards for dead skaters? You know, we live in a world of cars, and people are at risk. I know you've seen the impact that these ghost bikes have on people, the families of the people who've been killed. Just tell us what the impact is.
Most ghost bikes are put up by friends or family of the victim. I think it's just a basic human impulse to respond to a tragedy. You saw in New York City after 9/11, flyers all across the street. You see roadside memorials on highways. As a public art project, ghost bikes are about getting people to stop and think And at the very least, I mean, that's a starting point for a larger conversation.
We've been speaking with Carolyn Schepansky of the League of American Bicyclists, the Bike Safety and Education Lobbying Group, and also Ryan Knuckle, who helped found New York City's Ghost Bike Project. Ryan, Carolyn, thank you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So, will education or buffered bike lanes help? To weigh in and to see pictures of these ghost bikes, go to hereandnow.org. And while there, click on to join tomorrow's web chat on kids and sports head injuries. We're sort of on a safety roll here. Want to hear from you. Latest news is next, Here and Now.